This podcast is a publication of the Engineering Management Institute, where we are committed to building professional development systems, including project management and people leadership programs that support the growth of engineers and their firms. Download our AE Industry Trends Report for insights on the Great Resignation, remote work productivity, and people-centric cultures. To get your copy, visit engineeringmanagementinstitute.org.
Welcome to this episode of the AEC Engineering and Technology Podcast, a podcast dedicated to helping engineering professionals find technology that fits their needs. I am your host for this episode, Nick Heim, and in this episode, I'll be speaking with Brian Vizzaretta from Drone Deploy. Brian was previously featured in episode 5 of this podcast, where he talked about how 360-degree cameras are becoming the new standard for site photos. In today's episode, Brian will be speaking about how to measure ROI and evaluation of technology products, effectively marketing technology to field teams, and building products and processes in public. With that, let's jump into today's episode. Brian, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Good to see you, Nick, as always. I know I think I probably talked to you one of the most out of majority of my LinkedIn friends that we met through online channels. So good to see you as always. Recording another episode.
Likewise, man. And it's good to have you back on the show for everybody listening. The first episode we did with Brian was actually one of the first all the way back in episode 5. So check that out if you want to learn what, you know, Brian's been up to. But I know, Brian, there's been some changes. I think you've got a new role over at Drone Deploy, right? So why don't you tell us a little bit more about what's been going on recently?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I mean, maybe just even like a background really quickly would be, I worked for a general contractor in Boston originally as a technology manager, and then ended up going into the field as an assistant super. Both my parents own general contracting companies, so grew up in the construction world, but always had a love for technology. So was a user of both Drone Deploy and Struction Site since 2018. Yeah, early 2018. So had the opportunity to bring those technologies into the company, scale them, meet with hundreds of project teams and kind of get them set up, onboarded, and, you know, track progress. I wanted to move to New York City. Long story short, ended up leaving the GC life and ended up going into the startup world. So work from home now in New York, and it's been great. Originally started as a solutions marketing manager. So got brought on to work with the rest of the marketing team on making sure things we were putting out there are relevant to people in the field, right? I mean, very often you can see a lot of buzzwords and jargon that doesn't actually resonate with people who end up needing to read it. So it was a good dichotomy between, you know, we have a lot of very, very intelligent people on that team. And sometimes the biggest missing aspect sometimes is just culture. Like, do you understand the culture of the people you're talking to? But now, as of last month, I got moved into a new role, which is called like growth operations. Essentially, kind of funny because we kind of like carved out this own role, but in essence, it's just looking at like the entire customer journey. So looking at a lot of our, you know, accounts and understanding the roadblocks they kind of have. Very often, I think in a lot of tech companies, you have different people that are just in charge of their portion of the funnel, but you need to be able to, you know, have some other people that sit back and audit the speed of which somebody can actually move through that funnel, right? Like when someone gets brought onto the product, like, do they have an onboarding video that is accurate? And then once they start pouring concrete, like, are we detecting somewhere in our product that we should be recommending them best practices for concrete around that stage, instead of them having to go look for it, kind of producing things for them. So it's been great. A month into it now and just laying out all the benchmarks I kind of want to do for the year.
Yeah, which is awesome, right? Because so often you find, in my experience, many tech companies will come in, right? We're going to disrupt some part of AEC. Construction's a big one, right? And what they often miss is the nuance and the, you know, the market specific sectors. Like, hey, you know, architects have a different need than engineers, have a different need than contractors, right? Who have a different need than subs and specialty contractors, right? So the fact that you get to actually kind of attack the problems for each specific customer is great because, as you know, right, not all of your customers have the same types of pain points.
And it's actually pretty funny because other type of tech companies, you lead with the most innovative, like show all the features, show like the most innovating cutting edge feature that may even be in beta. But something we've realized that makes the most sense in what we do is the average majority of people we're talking to necessarily doesn't need to know so much about features as much as they need to know about like a application of when to use certain tools. So like, all right, we're about to close up the walls. What do we actually have for them that is going to be useful at that time? And I think a lot of it is time dependent, because if you're a, you know, a customer or even a prospect for the first time and you're looking at our website, or you're looking at, you know, if you're on a different type of project and you look at our website and you see a project that doesn't resonate with you, you're quickly going to be like, oh, that's not for me, and bounce. So, you know, there's a lot of things to consider when we're doing a lot of these go-to-market strategies.
Absolutely. And so, Brian, why don't we actually just delve kind of right into the meat of our interview here. So you guys are at heart, right, making reality capture accessible to everyone and making it simple. But before we kind of get into more of that, right, could you explain what reality capture entails, but specific to construction?
Yeah. So I'll start by disclaiming, because I love being guests on podcasts, but I like to go a little more off the rails than maybe. So I'm going to start by saying all these thoughts are my personal beliefs and opinions. They do not reflect or employ in any way. They don't make me say that, but I say that for my own, you know, so I can sleep at night. So nonetheless, I believe like my personal take on reality capture is it's just site documentation. It's like a fancier way of just saying we have a project, a building, an asset that we want to document for a purpose. The categories within reality capture have different levels of accuracy, different level of, you know, things that they're targeting. But in essence, it's just how do we communicate this physical object and document it and communicate with it amongst other, you know, remote teams, amongst designers who need to go retrofit it with new mechanicals, things like that. So we're pretty much just a product that focuses on allowing project teams to either document progress or go capture existing conditions of assets. We don't even just focus on AEC. We also have an oil and gas is a big part of our business as well. And that's a lot of like asset inspections and recurring inspections, whether it's ground robotics or just maintaining like drones for maintenance.
Which makes sense.
As well as agriculture, mining, and some other ones. But oil and gas is one of our larger ones. Agriculture is a big one as well.
And I think that, you know, and disclaimer here too, right? So I personally am a drone deploy customer, right? Really like the product and what you guys are doing. And one of the reasons that I personally like it is its simplicity, right? Because like you said, Brian, like reality capture is an entire spectrum, and depending on the use case and the application, it can get pretty intense, right? But I would say, at least in my scenario, right, for the average user, like the amount of reality capture we're using is very basic, but it's extremely helpful. And I'd assume that's probably the case for a lot of your customers when it comes to, right, progress documentation, inspection, right? Just even organizing photos on a map or a plan is something that is really new, but also really useful to people, even though that's just a super basic use case of reality capture, right?
Yeah, it's actually astonishing, because, you know, every business usually has trouble when they have to answer the question, like, what problem do you actually solve? And I believe, like, especially I came from the construction site side, which is the 360 capture platform prior to the acquisition of Drone Deploy, to make like this one unified product. And, you know, the 360 photo is very powerful, but I believe that our superpower was actually organizing it to a location, right? Because a photo, you know, say you're doing a multifamily building, right? And six stories, every unit type looks very similar. You know, every room looks very similar. So just because I have a photo, it's in 360, it could be in room 302. And sorry, I'm saying room, but the Boston side of me, sometimes I have a tough time with saying room, and some people don't understand me unless you're from the Northeast, but I could be in room 302 and, you know, and it could look like, you know, 106, et cetera. So I think the location aspect is a huge portion, because you are building something or working on projects, you know, even in engineering, you're working on assets, like location is a big portion of it. And within that asset, they have multiple layers, different corners, different areas. So the photo documentation is important, but making sure you can reference where it is in the area to actually go fix it.
And that, honestly, Brian, for the first few years of my career, that was probably the largest pain point, right? You take all these photos, right? You write this great report, and then it comes time to actually fix something, right? And the first question is, well, where is it, right? What's the quantity? And as kind of like basic as it sounds, that's like a problem, particularly in my industry, that really needed solving. And through structured side, right, it became a relatively easy process. Nothing's ever perfect, right? But being able to tell someone, yeah, it's at column B, grid 2. And then they get there and they see exactly what was in the photo and they can actually get to work. That was really a game changer for us.
Especially because in your line of work, you know, engineers going out and doing these asset inspections of, parking garages, right? Like, there's only one or two engineers at a time that are going to do this, but the information that it needs to get relayed to, the owner could be somewhere else physically. There's other designers on your team that, you know, may want to see it or need to see it for whatever reason. And I think when we really talk about the ROI, one of the biggest metrics I look for in a project to see if it's successful is if you look at the teams and the amount of people added to the project, right? Like if it's two, you're gonna see a much different return on investment than 30. And nowadays, every project, it takes a village. Like it's not, you know, if you're seeing these photos with one or two, three, four, five people in the max, then that's a pretty good indicator that they're not thinking maybe about it the best way possible. The more people invited to it, the more it's actually going to, like, you know, pay dividends down the line.
And that was, you know, you beautifully answered the next question I was going to ask, which was about ROI, right? So let's take that kind of to the next step, right? So a qualitative metric to say, hey, like, what's our ROI is the number of people using the product, right, or on a project, which then asks the question, why aren't there more people? So, like, what are some of the challenges that you see in getting people to actually, like, use and eventually adopt the product widespread?
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess on the topic of ROI, typically when it's asked, I always, first question is like, oh, who's currently, like, why are you asking about ROI? Because most of the time it's people don't necessarily need to know an ROI number. They just need a justification on why they should purchase and making sure that they're not going to lose money on spending money on this thing that doesn't get used, right? So when I think about ROI, I break it into different scenarios for like a project team. So for you example, if we could say it's going to reduce, it were to expedite this trip and not have to have you go a second time, that's one sliver. And the way I usually do ROI like calculations with teams, like it doesn't really take, you don't need to calculate this perfect number. You just need to show that processes are improving and then show that, you know, going forward, if we were to keep the same process, it would improve, you know, in perpetuity. So, you know, I like to take different like steps in a process. So if you were to say visiting a job site, taking photos in your phone, going back to the office is another hour. Organizing those into folders manually is 3 to 4 hours. Pinning those in Bluebeam to a drawing is another 2 hours, et cetera. And then show the other process, which is show up to site with the 360 camera, mark your starting location, capture, and then all the time that's spent not organizing the back end is your time differential. I like to go by return of time more than ROI because you just take people's calculation of their hourly rate, multiply it, and then that's how you get a number. And then I usually take it process by process. So, you know, time saved visiting the site, that's one process that gets implemented and changed. The next process is actually sharing the information. So if you were to say, on average, you ask 10 engineers, how many emails do you think this reduces in the process from someone needing to not ask you 3 or 4 or 5 follow-up questions? They were to say, you know, it's saving me an hour of probably 1 hour a week for 7 weeks. And then you get an average of, you know, 1 to 2 hours amongst all your engineers. Process number two now has a number. And you just kind of keep doing that exercise with your executive team up until the point where they're just like, I don't need to know exact number. I just know that we are moving in the right direction by doing this.
And that's really excellent, because it's really like, for our case, right, it was like a rough order of magnitude. It was like, hey, here's how much we're being charged. right? Divide that by the engineer's hourly rate. Okay, can we save X amount of hours? Or can we, like we talk about all the time, can we delegate what had to be the engineer's work because they're the only one who had access to the data in a way that made sense? Okay, now we can actually pass those tasks and de-skill. Like, you don't need a professional engineer to count things. Like, we're all capable of doing that, right? And that was actually one of the ways we justified it to our executive team was, we'll look at all of this time you can save by allowing the engineer to go delegate tasks. And that's been a huge win for us.
Yeah. And something that also doesn't get taken into account with a lot of these exercises is like the satisfaction of the end user. So, you know, how, like, what is the impact from 1 through 10 of like a benefit this is to your life? Another good survey question is, like, surveys sound super elementary and dumb, but they're actually pretty useful, especially if you have some reward either for doing them or you have some incentive to the team of saying, hey, you know, we're only asking 15 of you for this. We'd really appreciate this feedback because this is going to help us choose the direction of what we want to do. But asking a survey question of like, do you believe this improves your quality of life? Yes or no? What order of magnitude? You know, if we were to take this away from you, how much of a detriment would that be on you, right? Like, those are really good questions to ask that help tell the story as well. I think very often the concerns from an executive team on purchasing technology is more like, is this going to be disruptive to the end user? Is this going to make their life more challenging? Is this something that is just going to, you know, be cool for the first couple of weeks and then gets thrown in a closet and then we just have this running license of something that we didn't use? And then also, like, in the industry, we don't have a lot of R&D budgets, right? So everything is coming from somewhere else where it's like a billable project that you're signing into, et cetera. And I think we, as an industry, we really need to do a better job of pushing, like, the fact that we should be doing these controlled pilots in, you know, a systematic way with the research and development budget, because the meeting of over for like a $5,000 license, if you have four or five of those executives in there in 2 to 3 meetings, you just paid for the license and just their hourly rate, right? Like, us just talking about it is the equivalent of what you could have spent in your time to just buy the license. And I mean, that's going to sound very biased from being on the technology side, but being somebody who was the buyer of technology as well, sometimes the hoops and bounds we're made to go through to do something that we believe as the end user is clearly obvious, sometimes tells a lot about, you know, a culture of how things are seen. So that's my point.
And that is quite common, I'd say, Brian, in engineering firms where, and I've been part of these discussions where you're right, 2 to 3 principals, 2 to 3 meetings, hourly rate, blah, blah, blah. And the pilot would have been paid for, right? Or a year subscription, Just depending on the specifics of the situation, right? So I guess then that also leads me to another question, right? Like, what have you found have been some of the best ways beyond like the ROI metrics that we've talked about, right, to sell to these executive teams and to also to the end users, right? Because they're also going to have a say in what gets adopted.
Yeah. So I would say, and I did a LinkedIn post about this where I said the single biggest metric I focus on is time to value. So just because you could have some of the best software that you're looking to implement that has a super clear purpose, but delaying that initial upfront work and not seeing the return for, you know, a week, 4 or 5 weeks can kind of make it less relevant in most people's eyes. So I like to usually, like, whenever you're doing a pilot or implementing something, making sure it's relevant to like a very important purpose. Like, we're about to pour concrete. Let's go make sure we do a drone flight. And that's your first element, because that concrete is going to be poured and it's going to be dry tomorrow, right? You come into the field office, you have a missing sleeve. Where are you going? You're going to the drone flight, right? And that is the quick aha moment. It's, you know, seeing the product demos and things like that is cool, but until you actually have to go pull it up yourself, that's the mind shift change of, I can actually use this. This is something that is providing me value. So I say biggest important thing is timing. Like, timing is super, super critical. And I think just saying like, oh, we're going to do this massive scale rollout. I like to even think about it when I was implementing by like industry type, market sector, sorry. So hospital projects, historic preservation, they all have like these super critical moments within their project life cycle. So I would try to hit them and have it be relevant to those projects at those times.
Which is a really great point. And, you know, we recently hired a couple engineers, and to kind of piggyback off what you said, right? Like they got trained, right? But what they told me is that it really wasn't relevant until they started instituting what they learned in their training onto their actual projects, right? It's like you said, demos are great, walkthroughs are great until you kind of put pen to paper, let's say hand to controller, maybe in this case, right? For your project specific to what you're doing. Sometimes the benefits aren't quite as obvious, but when they do hit, and I've experienced this, right? It's like a light bulb goes off, right? Oh, this 360 walkthrough, I can go look at this specific location, just like it's Google Earth, and I can go gather this information that would have taken me a trip, you know, 2 to 3 hours round trip to site to get back to. And then once people start seeing these benefits, right, it's kind of like the snowball. Picks up speed, and suddenly you have a whole organization adopting the solution, which is pretty cool to see.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Brian, I guess any other changes since StructionSite was acquired by Drone Deploy that you'd like to speak to? Because, right, StructionSite, just as a reminder for the audience, was all about ground capture, whether it be through 2D photos, pinning locations to plan, 360 photos, video walks. But I think Drone Deploy has some interesting things that are going on that you might want to speak to.
Yeah, so biggest announcement was at our Drone Deploy conference at the end of last year. We announced like the unified platform. And, you know, before I even go into like the sales pitch on that, there's a really good, he was an HBS, Harvard Business School professor, and like seen as one of like the biggest marketing geniuses out there, Theodore Levitt. And he talks about like the marketing myopia and how, you know, people want a quarter inch hole, not a quarter inch drill. Right. And understanding the business that you're actually in. So he talks a lot about like how the train systems kind of went extinct. They didn't go extinct, but like the businesses didn't grow at the levels that, you know, they were top dog one day. And now you have all these other companies. And it's because they believe that they were in the train business, not the transportation business. So I think with our positioning, we understood, not we, because it's above my pay grade, definitely above my pay grade, but Drone Deploy and also the owners of StructionSite understood that they were in the business of reality capture, photo documentation, and fulfilling a need. So you had this really powerful exterior drone mapping software, and then you had this interior 360 capture software. And very often we would hear about, you know, there was times where I was running these skunk work projects on like strapping a 360 camera to a drone. We built like our own custom 3D printed attachment for a Mavic 2, and it was terrible. Like, it didn't make sense. You have a 20 megapixel camera, and you're using this 360 camera strapped to a moving object with no stabilization, like at that speed, right? So we're doing all these workarounds. Drone Deploy was working on a ground product, but like I said, you know, if a product's not ready for the market and it's not 100% there, it gets very difficult for other people to switch. We were in competitive deals against Drone Deploy, and people wouldn't necessarily leave us because their product wasn't where it needed to be. So the biggest announcement was the fact that acquisition happened, and within a year, we were able to deliver bringing all the features of StructionSite into Drone Deploy Ground. So now it's called Drone Deploy Aerial, Drone Deploy Ground, and it's as simple as kind of like toggling in between interior and exterior. It really kind of feels like StructionSite 2.0. So the Drone Deploy Ground app itself is like StructionSite with a blue skin and some updated, you know, some cool widgets that like the connectivity is better. I think Drone Deploy had a really good, they understand user experience very well. The design teams on our team as well, like they're great. And it's just like good to see, it's good to see two, you know, teams come together, because then you can kind of do an evaluation of like, do we actually want this to change? Because we have the opportunity now to make all these big changes if we're going to do it. So a lot of things kind of got questioned, and I think the best product kind of came out of it.
Which is great, because as right, you guys were essentially more of a kind of like more of a startup, and Drone Deploy is, I mean, you could still classify it as a startup, but it had been really mature in the market for a solid decade, right? And now the two coming together, and I could personally speak to what Brian's saying, right? Like, the merger of the two has been great because now you get the boast of the best of ground and air in one product. So if you are interested, definitely reach out to Brian for a demo or for some more information. But again, thank you so much for joining us today, Brian. Any final pieces of advice you'd like to give the audience, whether that be on, right, a career in technology, maybe switching from, you know, being in the field to a tech company, or anything that's on your mind?
I think a topic I think I want to end on is, you know, it's pretty relevant to you as well, Nick. You know, we're seeing more and more people start to get more comfortable with posting on LinkedIn and social media and what it can actually do for your career, but also building in public. So, you know, we're starting to publicly post about like things that are still in the works, also lessons learned of things that failures. It's just, you know, I think people like you and, you know, there are a lot of great people out there, Matt Graves, Jonathan Core, like a lot of people out there posting right now that are starting to expose not just vulnerability, but reality of where construction teams and engineering teams and design teams are at with their actual technology journey. I think the more you can talk about it in public, the more you, you know, have a level playing field of what's real. Because, you know, if the only articles you see out there are the AI is going to take our jobs and AI is already here, the more we kind of let, you know, these larger corporations and news outlets dictate what executives see as reality. And I think executives will respond the most to seeing a project engineer trying something out, you know. So I just encourage people to do more posting and follow people like Nick, who also help others kind of get into that mindset. So build in public,
which I appreciate, Brian. I'll add to that, right? It's like, so I'll be honest about like what I'm doing while still respecting like the asks that my company has made of me, right? So if you're listening, just have an open conversation with your leadership and say, hey, like I want to do X, Y, and Z, and respect their wishes, because there are some things like, hey, we've got that are kind of under wraps and they don't want me talking about. And I say, that's no problem, right? I'm just respecting what my employer has asked of me. But then they've also given me the freedom to post some of more of what you see as public, right? Which I think has benefited both sides. And if you're an executive listening to this, just consider that you actually may, by giving an inside look into how your company runs a little behind the scenes, you may actually get a better response. You may get more employees interested in what you're doing, potential employees, clients, right? And it may have some really unexpected positive benefits. So don't just rule it out because it's, hey, we can't post on social media because X, Y, or Z. Just analyze it for what it is and then make a decision based on data and facts is kind of what I would say.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thanks for having me. It's always a good time talking with you.
Yeah, my pleasure, Brian. Thanks so much. And I'm sure we'll be back for round three at some point. But before we wrap up, what is the best way for the audience to reach you?
LinkedIn. And then I thought I had the calendar booking. I think I have like a random link there right now, but just literally add me on LinkedIn, Brian Vizzaretta. I mean, you'll have my name here. So I think that's probably the best place. Email, I usually reserve to a lot of like the internal company, but I accept pretty much every LinkedIn post as long as, you know, you're not trying to do something weird and stuff.
Sell you estimating services, right?
I mean, some of those I'll always go through a sale. I mean, I'll usually tell people when they're trying to sell me something, like, oh, I'll go through the sales process like here and there just to see what's going on. But I tell them, like, I'm not the buyer. And I think even with my old structure site email, people thought sometimes they would email that email thinking I was working for a GC. So I would pretty much see like all these type of companies like cold emails. So I always like to learn. But yeah, that was a really long answer to say, connect with me on LinkedIn.
Excellent. And much like Brian, right, you can reach me on LinkedIn. You can reach any of us here at EMI with any questions, concerns, comments. So we are definitely here to help. And Brian, thank you so much. And we'll catch you next time.
All right. See you.
Please remember, you can find the show notes for this episode at aectechpodcast.com. There, you will find a summary of key points discussed in today's episode, as well as links to any of the resources, websites, or books mentioned during this episode. Until next time, I wish you the best in all of your engineering and technology endeavors. Thank you.